You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Dr. Alec Yazensack with the University of South Alabama is going to join us in just a second. You know, you've heard Professor on with us before, talking about mail-in voting. Latest piece here on the importance of statewide electoral uniformity. There's a lot to be learned in this latest opinion here from the doctor. We'll get to that in just a second. Right now, I want to check in with my buddy Larry Kirby at LCM. And, you know, we talked on Monday about cars. I sat quietly and behaved myself. Now we get to talk about trucks again.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, we got two this morning, as we were talking about off the air. We got a 2018 Chevrolet Silverado LT, fully loaded. It is two-wheel drive. It's got every amenity you can put on it. It's only got 15,000 miles on it, so it's still under factory warranty. And we got a 2019 Ford. We get a lot of calls for regular cabs. It's a regular cab, two-wheel drive. It's got the 5.0 in it, and the Chevrolet's got the 5.3. And something not everybody knows, that the two-wheel drives actually have more towing capacity than a four-wheel drive.
I didn't know that. I learned something new.
They got more torque.
Well, there you go. So if you want to pull something, you got the vehicle. You also had the financing options for folks.
Absolutely. Our credit unions are just, they're really amazing. I mean, they're just great rates, great terms. So we got a whole variety of lenders. You know, we got banks, we got finance companies, we got local lenders, and we got lenders scattered throughout the Southeast. So we got options for just about everybody.
All right. Tell folks how to find you.
Come see us at Highway 90 at Plantation Road, online at lcmmotorcars.com. Like us on Facebook or just call us at 375-0068.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks.
All right, Larry Kirby checking in from LCM. All right, 1236. And so if you'll go back, and if you want to go back and do some research here on mail-in voting and the pitfalls therein in the history of this podcast with our next guest. There's, I think, three of them up on our podcast site. Either go to fmtalk1065.com if you subscribe to iTunes or Stitcher or any of the other platforms. They're waiting for you there as well. But something brand new to add to our library from Dr. Alec Yazensack from the University of South Alabama is happening right now. Dr. Yazensack, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Sean. It's good to be back.
Good to have you here as well. You know, in the past, we've been talking about really the mail-in and, you know, and you also way back in the spring, disambiguated between absentee voting and mail-in voting. But you talked about how fraud occurs in mail-in voting. You also talked about how there's just pitfalls and human beings making mistakes. Heck, we're seeing some of that already, and it's not even November 3rd out there.
Well, that's right. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of positioning going on, a lot of people politically setting themselves up and legally setting themselves up for circumstances that could happen in the elections related to these kinds of issues. And I want to give a big shout out to my collaborator, Doug Jones, at the University of Iowa. And he's been doing this stuff for a long, long time and is one of the foremost experts in voting systems integrity, technical voting systems. And he and I have had talked about this briefly and decided that it would be an appropriate time to write this piece to help clarify some of these issues and to encourage mostly elections officials, but also citizens, to consider things they can do to ensure the uniformity and the consistency of the value of a vote. And that's what this is really all about, Sean.
Yeah, and I want to go through this, too. When you talk about Dr. Douglas Jones, who did this with you, a Democrat, right? A longtime Democrat. So this is bipartisan. Y'all are coming at this from you be checks for each other, make sure this is based in fact and not in opinion.
Well, and we are, but that's not the way we approached it. He suggested that we apply this standard so people would know there's nothing partisan about this. We address this as a voting integrity issue, which is the way, you know, I've addressed all my voting integrity issues as matters of logic and science to the best of my ability. But what we recognize as scientists is that everybody sees things from their point of view. There's no way you can see it from a point of view you don't have. And so it's in the notice of full disclosure, we have gone ahead and announced who we are. I am a Republican, he is a Democrat. If you don't like it or you don't think we're fair or honest, at least you know the facts of what we say we are, and then you can And then we can come back at it another angle if you need us to.
Well, I just want to let, and the fact that you address these things from the position of a scientist and educator, that's why I think you and I have, you know, worked so well together in our talks over the last year or so, because that's what I'm interested in, is getting fact. And on this portion, the importance of statewide electoral uniformity. You say here, as the fall election approaches, it is increasingly apparent that we may not have a definitive result on election day. That's the first scary thing for a lot of people, what that will mean. And you also go into saying why that might happen for mail-in and then eventually electoral battles that they go to the court, they go to the judicial branch, right? I mean, that's what we're all fearing, but it sounds like you believe that could happen.
Well, I mean, I think it's inevitable. I think that we have much more going on this year than a presidential election. But were this presidential election to be decided by, a number of electoral votes that are could be covered by one or two or three states changing over, I think that there's every indication, every likelihood that those states will be challenged to go back and validate their outcomes in an attempt to win. And that's what we know. Regardless of your party, if you're within, once the election is over and you see the results, and if you believe that you can win by contesting the vote, then you'll contest the vote. Mm-hmm. And so there are many, many circumstances in this day and age that can lead to that kind of a challenge. And of course, the normal count, recount procedures will work their way through. But even during that time, if there's some indication that there was an inequity in standards across the state, the courts could be involved even on election day or before election day, the day before election day or the day after. Even though the normal canvass process can take up to several days, and you'd like to see that completed before the courts are engaged, but I think that's not going to happen this year. I think we're going to have a lot of court activity.
Okay. I want to talk about this from a state, intrastate versus interstate. So this is mostly intrastate that you're looking at, right? The standardization, making sure they avoid differences between how any given, let's take for this case, Alabamian votes, right?
Yes.
So let's
pick two counties in Alabama, okay. Washington County and Baldwin County.
All right.
If they have different standards of how a absentee ballot is handled, then that could be challenged in court as saying one of those two counties is not having the equal value of their vote. Because, for example, let's say one of those two counties used a privacy envelope. And so if you don't include your privacy envelope, the courts have now ruled that ballot would be disqualified. So if one state has the requirement that a voter put their ballot inside an envelope, the other one doesn't have that requirement, then you have a higher likelihood in the state that requires the privacy envelope of having your ballot disqualified by an administrative procedure.
So
that could lead to a complaint.
So they would come in and look and say, all right, so the people, the way Washington County does it, they use this envelope, Baldwin County doesn't. Therefore, they had differences in their voting situation. Therefore, what? You throw out the vote? You challenge? I mean, what does that then mean?
Well, it depends upon, of course, the circumstances. Let me be clear here, Sean. I don't know the circumstances in Washington or Baldwin County.
Sure, we're using that as a
specifically hypothetical. So if your listeners are thinking, oh, this is my county, no, that's not true at all. I just picked them as hypothetical.
How about we do it Yasinsack County?
In that particular circumstance, what you would probably be looking to do is to take those ballots that were disqualified in, let's say, County A, and re-qualify them and let them be counted. So if County A voted particularly strongly for one party or the other, the party that got the most support in the counted ballots would want more ballots to be qualified.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would go after that procedure, and they would go after that pile of ballots that was disqualified because they weren't in a privacy envelope.
Okay, and by the way, we're going to use Yasinsack County and Sullivan County, Alabama. So
there
those
you
are the
go. Perfect.
Those are our counties here. Okay, with that, right now, do you see or do you know in our state, are there currently, I mean, are you aware of currently differences between county to county that could be challenged? I've only ever voted in Mobile County, so I don't know.
Well, it's a great question, and it wouldn't say if I did, Sean. Of course, that this is up to the state elections officials and the county elections officials to be able to assess their voting systems and their voting processes and procedures for consistency. And for me to get involved in the specifics, I probably couldn't do. What we noticed in the paper is that Iowa and Pennsylvania have already seen court cases arise. Mm-hmm. Out of some of these inconsistencies. I believe those court cases were more about distribution of polling machinery. Have you got the same kind of polling machinery in the different counties across the state? Or have you got the same quantity relative to population of access to vote? Are the lines going to be long in County A, longer than in Sullivan County than they are in Yasinsack County? And so, you can Google those states and look for electoral contests and electoral court cases, and those will likely pop up.
You detail some of these possible places of problems here in this piece. You and Douglas Jones do. Signature verification. What is signature verification? At what point is this? Is this for mail-in? Is this for absentee? Is this for, or when I go and sign in on that little book, with the little line there where I sign my name when I go get my ballot?
Well, it absolutely applies to absentee ballots. An absentee ballot has to have an ability to connect that voter to the outer envelope, and that's done with signature verification. And I don't know if you've ever tried to do signature verification, Sean, but people's signatures vary naturally all the time. Mine varies naturally all the time. Mm-hmm. In my position, I'll end up signing 50 letters of the same nature to a group of students. And my signature at the end of those 50 letters is different than my signature was at the beginning of those 50 letters. And so for a novice, somebody who's received an hour's worth of training and signature verification, their ability to be able to determine accurately that a signature is forged on a ballot is pretty limited. And so the standards that you use is very difficult to be able to adjudicate. And so what you might look at is outcomes and say, well, Sullivan County, they disqualified 22% of the ballots because of signature verification. But in Yasinsack County, they only disqualified 3% of the absentee ballots for signature disqualification. And outcome could be used as evidence that the standard that was applied was different, when in fact it may just be that the people looked at them differently. Maybe that they were in fact different numbers of ballots that should have been disqualified. We don't know, but the point is that could lead to a court case. And so your signature is very important on your absentee ballot. Be sure to be careful and sign it carefully, and whether you send it back by mail or whether you carry it back to the polling place.
Say here, if counties apply, this goes what you're saying, inconsistent voter or ballot rejection standards, this adds additional potential inequity. So this is that 3% to 22%. We're guessing that between 3% and 22% is because they did it differently.
That's right. Well, that's a fairly strong evidence that one can't, because the counties in general, you think people sign their signature the same way. And so you, unless you have one county that is going to have 19% more ballot fraud than another county, then you assume it's a different standard. And so that's the bottom line: is that if they're dramatically, outcomes are dramatically different, you assume there's a different process to get there. And again, it's on the voter to make sure that they sign their signature consistently on their absentee ballot to what is on your state record for what your signature looks like, and be careful when you sign your absentee ballot. And of course, I encourage you to vote at your polling place.
Yeah, I would not have thought about my signature until you brought this up. And then you mentioned this a little bit when you're talking about Pennsylvania and Iowa, but we're getting it. You said tabulating machinery. So yeah. This is the like for me, my experience, right? You go, you fill out your Scantron sheet, and you go up there and you put it in that thing that looks like a printer, and it goes in there and it tabulates, and then it's gone, and you walk out with your sticker. Is that what you're talking about? The machinery?
That's exactly right. The way that machinery is set, and how it is the density of the sensitivity of those sensors to find stray marks, to not find stray marks, and those are mechanical settings, and those can absolutely be shown to be different. So if you have one that is set to detect a mark on a ballot that is only 10% transparent, okay, so you put a little bit of a pencil mark in a bubble, but it's only 10%. If you've got one voting machine that's set to count that as a vote, and another voting machine in a different county set a different way, then you've got a verifiable inconsistency across those counties of how those votes are counted.
So it's not
so
just
the parameters on the tabulating machinery is extremely important to consistency across the state.
So it's not something as simplistic as, you know, this is a ABC model from ABC, you know, tabulator company, and this is XYZ from XYZ company. It's the same unit. If it's just set differently, could be challenged.
Absolutely correct, Sean. And it's an absolute standard. If it's set that way, then there should be evidence of that effect, and it's non-reviewed. It's irrefutable. I mean, it's not subjective. It's a different standard. Now, what the solution to that would be, what the remedial action would be, as you mentioned before, who knows? What would you do if you had different standards on these voting machines? Well, you probably are looking to have ballots either disqualified or qualified, depending on the county's overall outcome. And this is a point I really want to strongly make, Sean, is that it's really important that we resolve these elections on Election Day. The problems really occur when you have after the fact knowledge out there of who won by how much, and so then you have the ability to file lawsuits that can try to change the outcome of the election. It's not, as all the candidates will say, well, we want every vote counted. That's not why you contest an election, is to have an absolute equal outcome. You contest an election to change the result. And so that's important to recognize. Once you know the outcome, what the votes were on Election Day, anything that happens after that is about trying to change that outcome.
Sure, it's going to be right. There's nobody from the winning side that says, "Hey, let's contest this." That's not happening. But how long this goes from the objective portion here to some subjective here? So how? From what you're seeing and these possible pitfalls, people said, well, it could be days before we have the results. Some people say it could be a week. You, Dr. Yasemsak, and working with Dr. Jones, how long? How long till, what is your, like, you think this could be weeks? You think it could be months? What could happen?
So, I mean, the Bush-Gore outcome was months, and I think that the circumstances surrounding this election are much worse. We're going to have a much higher percentage of absentee ballots, vote-by-mail ballots, and several states that have given 6 days or 7 days after the election to count votes that were ballots that were submitted prior to Election Day, and of course you'll have court cases that challenge whether they were, when they were submitted. If they don't have a postmark, how do you know, what's your chain of custody? And if that, then so you push your canvas, your normal canvas, back 7 days, and then there's a contest period after that canvas, and then there's lawsuits that can occur much later, but the court system's very slow. In my humble opinion, if assuming that we don't have something dramatic happen to give one presidential candidate a landslide, I think we're looking at least a week of not knowing.
Wow.
If we don't tighten up our belts, get these procedures uniform and consistent, and take away the court's ability to intervene, I think you're looking at minimum a week, the best you'll do.
You know, but some of the things that frighten, and we just got a minute left here, but I mean, there's, you've pointed out some very specific things, you know, with postmark deadlines and signature verification, tabulating machinery. But you also say in here, it must not be systemically easier to vote in one county than another. Dr. Yasemsak, I mean, that is subjective city. I can make up all kinds of things that said it's harder to vote here than it is there.
It is. That's absolutely the truth. But it's up to us as reasoned human beings to look at the situations that we're in. And I'll go back to the number of voting machines that you have. If you have the precincts in Sullivan County, each precinct has 4,000 voters, but the precinct in Yasinsack County only have 1,000 voters, and they have the same number of voting machines in the precinct, you've got a systemic problem.
Wow.
of ease of voting.
So this should be this right here is information for we the voters, but also this is a heads up. This is a siren call to people that run elections.
That's it. That's right. And that many of them know it, and so it's a reminder that it's sneaking up on you. Remember, elections officials are busy year-round. People think elections officials only work in October and November of major elections, but that's not true. Most elections officials are running elections year-round all the time. They're busy, busy people. They're tremendously effective public servants. But this election, again, Doug and I decided this election is just so important with so many characteristics coming out that we felt compelled to put out this paper now and try and encourage folks that know this stuff and folks that don't really realize it to get on the ball.
Dr. Yasinsack, it's always a pleasure to talk with you, and hopefully we'll get you back on in the weeks to come. You know, it's crunch time here, and everybody's wondering what's going to happen next, and you seem to have given us a little bit of a roadmap, so thank you.
Well, and you do a great public service by getting this out in the airwaves here, Sean. I appreciate you and what you do. Thank you very much, and go Jags.
There you go. See, that's it's good. I wish we had time to talk a little football. Next time, we're talking football. All right, 12:56, we'll be right back.